Swamp Box, what are you doing here? This is a combat zone. It's restricted. Ease off on your main thruster and head over to patreon.com/SWOCBC for episodes of our all-new series, Inside the Insider, where the gang explores articles from every single issue of the official Star Wars Insider fan magazine in order and get an even closer look at how Star Wars and its fandom have evolved over the years. New episodes with each public upload months earlier for patrons. Red 24, Red 30, follow me to patreon.com/SWOCBC for the latest episode of SWAT Box, Inside the Insider today. In target range, it's ahead. All ships jump to light speed.
The Star Wars Old Canon Book Club is made possible by contributions on Patreon. Head to patreon.com/SWOCBC for ad-free episodes, reading guides, movie and TV episode audio watch-alongs, and more. In fact, there's a full-length audio commentary for the very film we're discussing today, available now for Legacy of the Force patrons. Today's old canon fact of the day comes from A Guide to the Star Wars Universe, 3rd edition by Bill Slavicek, first published in 2000. 8 years after the Battle of Hoth, Luke Skywalker and Callista attempted to rescue an expedition of Wampa hunters. The ice creatures killed everyone in the expedition, and Skywalker and Callista barely escaped. Today's selection is The Empire Strikes Back, a film by Irvin Kershner, first released on May 17th, 1980. Enjoy the show, and may the Force be with you, always.
Hey there, space cadets and cadetralunis.
No.
Cadetralunis?
Right.
Hey, babies and boys.
No, that ain't it.
What's...
Greetings, Star Warriors.
It's perfect. It's so good. Yeah.
Greetings.
That's how you fucking do it.
Greetings, Star Warriors. You're about to embark.
Was it just the comics, or did they try that twice, or did they just try it one time?
No, it's only that one time.
It's, just, yeah, it's so good, bad.
Like, it's awful.
Absolutely, someone that doesn't get Star Wars would be like, it's like a dad that didn't get it. It was like, oh, you guys are Star
Warriors. Star Warriors,
like,
yeah.
No, dude. That's 70s cringe. I don't know what the word they
imagine asking a vet if he was a warrior. Like...
If it was like the Roman Empire, yeah, probably.
I guess so.
No, he'd be a legionary. He'd be like a legionary guy. He'd be like, warrior.
Yeah.
Are you the a warrior? Hell? My sir. My good sir, are you a warrior?
If this Star is like, Warriors! Yeah. Come like, out and play!
Clink, of course, clink.
Yeah. Anybody who's an actual soldier can be a warrior if they want to. But what I'm saying is...
It's not a great title.
It's a cringe thing to ask someone. welcome to the Empire Strikes Back movie episode of the SWOC Box. Is that catching on?
Let's say it is.
We it's like pretty it. Insular. Like, no, it is because people, I see it in like the Patreon responses and Twitter stuff.
Do you think we should sell a box of old Star Wars merchandise and call it a SWOC box?
If it is financially feasible, if that's not like...
Like things not, we find at the
like
flea market.
Like a loot crate of
trash.
Of old used toys.
Star Wars.
Yeah.
They've got to have those old Topps trading cards somewhere. We can get like 8,000 of those.
Those guys, aren't those worth...
Dude.
I don't have no clue.
I thought trading cards were the original like Pokemon cards. Like people just were like... You know, like they're bullshitly overpriced.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think it was more like fun. I mean, I think there were collectors, but like, I don't think there was ever a time when like stamps, for example, were like as hot as Pokemon cards.
All right.
You know what I'm saying?
Unless you got those upside down reverse holo Lincolns. Those are worth money.
Blue eyes, white Lincolns.
That'd be, oh man, that'd be tight.
We watched the
American
4K,
President Yu-Gi-Oh.
Get out of here. We watched the 4K 80 cut, the fifth beta version available out there on the internet.
Jefferson, magician, I summon you.
Dude.
Macaroni and cheese.
Dude.
He's taking credit.
That, what a great, like, I don't know why it hit me even differently. Like, I guess I had the same feeling of
are
watching.
Are you going to talk about Empire Strikes?
Yes, he's definitely.
I thought you were going to talk
about Yu-Gi-Oh.
I thought you were about Yu-Gi-Oh presidents again.
No,
he's talking about Star Wars.
Like, I'm saying, like, it was sick to watch it redone, like, for the, like, A New Hope. But maybe I had, like, seen it before, or it didn't. Seeing Empire like that was so, I guess maybe because A New Hope is feels old. Like, it feels the oldest, even with the best visuals. But here, like, it's like listening to it on, like, a vinyl, like, a record that you know on vinyl. It's so interesting. The colors, the way things were different. It actually inspired me to bust out, because I have, like, a CRT, and I've been watching through Samurai Champloo on like, the DVD section of my DVD VHS player on an old ass TV just for the vibes.
Yeah, that's great.
And it's so effective, and, like, oh, what a treat to watch that.
Can I say really quickly, by happenstance, but maybe fate.
Yeah.
After we watched, the next day, went out to dinner on the TV in the restaurant.
Empire Strikes Back.
Above the bar. Empire Strikes Back, the new one.
Oh, yeah.
So I got to see the difference in Cloud City. And it is actually pretty drastic.
It's crazy how different it is.
I cut
the whole top off the whole set, pretty much.
It's all
the windows, too.
Yeah, it doesn't have the same feel. It's a little more yellow. It's very strange.
And a lot more, like, just outside going on in the newer version, which is, like,
there's a lot of weird, like, flying by the city.
Yeah,
exactly. A lot of outside shots.
But you're saying the interiors, they chop off the top?
The interiors do not look the same as in the original.
Yeah, they, like, digitally alter them completely.
To just, like,
add windows, mostly.
Okay. Because, like, it felt like I was looking, maybe because we were hyper-focusing on the backgrounds. One, Cloud City has a lot of different walls, but they were so cool and so different. And then the way that, like, they did, like, bloom effect lighting and other stuff, like, it just felt completely different also.
Yeah, I know I've been saying this about a lot of stuff that we've been talking about on the show, but in another way, which we arrived organically at while watching the movie, which if you're on Patreon, you can listen to us watch it right now. It's there. But we came to it naturally, and I just want to make sure that you guys listening to the show don't miss this, because it is so central, I think, to the thesis of what we all kind of felt about this movie, which is, like, this is the first Star Wars movie again, in a way. And the way that is that this is the first one that they made after they realized that it was a thing, and they made all the decisions about, like, what that thing is. So now,
especially the Force.
Yeah, the Force, but, like, also, like, the characters, like, Luke, wormy, dead. Like,
right.
Luke is now the Luke you know. Vader,
Luke the, like, new Jedi.
Yes. Vader outfit changed. Like, he's Luke's father. Like,
way worse. Like, somehow way worse.
The boss.
Than original Vader.
Like, without a Tarkin, he is just all of it.
Yeah. Here's what.
Leash off.
Yeah. Here's what a cool Star Wars character is. Boba Fett. Bang. He's in there. Mysterious guy.
Forlom. Let's not forget Forlom.
Yeah. Zuckuss, Forlom, Dengar, and Bosk.
Not Dengar.
It's like IG-88.
The wild thing is, like, in the first one, at least the way that the history makes it seem, like, Lucas was the only one that knew what Star Wars was.
Conceptually,
and then, like, ILM, his, like, nerd buddies were like, we're more than happy to get wild.
They knew it better than
he did. So it was like him and them, and then the studios were just like, whatever, you made American Graffiti. And then now everyone's like, we all know Star Wars, and, like, the music, every level of it, everyone is like ILM, in that they're like, we're going to bring every game is at an A across the fucking board.
Plus, John Williams kills it.
Plus way more money, so way more songs. Mm-hmm. Plus George Lucas was smart and not full of hubris like he was in the 90s. Brought in a real screenwriter and brought in, like, an actual amazing filmmaker.
I have so much, like, I used to think of George Lucas as one guy. From doing this podcast and, like, looking more interviews, it's pretty clear there's, like, young George Lucas, and then when we get to some of the insider stuff, already 10 years out,
punished Lucas,
he's already the like, retconning
Venom
guy
Lucas.
But just, like, imagine having that much, like, I am not the guy to make what I want if I'm behind, like, if I'm helming it
right
from, like, the director's position, and, like, letting other people come in and take it over is, like, truly his greatest
thing. He's always been kind of like a weird NorCal guy, but just the power that it gave him to be the Star Wars guy also was so insane.
He also became like the effects guy, the like sound guy, the like
he was like Spielberg 1.0 pretty much.
He was like, I'm just going to be the guy that makes every movie better in some way.
Yeah, it was him and Spielberg and Coppola and a couple other guys that were just like James Cameron, another guy, just that era of like big budget movies that like push the envelope forward instead of now where we're like McDonald's-ing movies out. Like, it's pretty crazy.
There's an interesting thing, and we'll do a whole episode on it. Probably, is it Patreon exclusive?
Which one?
The magazine.
It's Inside the Insider. So Inside the Insider is something that we're starting with this episode that's going to go up every time that we upload an episode on the main feed. And you'll get them. Everybody will get them eventually. So there's no like need to sign up to hear it. But the deal is there's one every time we do an episode starting now for forever. And every once in a while when we need to like skip a session or it's been a lot of weeks before we put up an episode, we'll toss out a couple of these and then you can kind of get another angle on Star Wars history where every episode represents one issue of the Star Wars Insider, starting all the way back in 1987 in fall with issue number one of the Lucasfilm Fan Club magazine, which took 20 issues to become the Star Wars Insider. So you're going to get three articles from each magazine. So we're each going to read one and kind of like give each other a book report on it and kind of like talk about how Star Wars has been growing and the kind of weird things that we find and notice. And we're already like accidentally doing the show. So once we get there,
what I was going to say is like the one of the things that I was tasked with reading was about ILM in the process. And they had like an interesting micro blurb about how in the 50s, people, I guess, got over movies with special effects and they wanted more grounded reality based. And it wasn't until what Alex was talking about in the latter half of the 70s where suddenly it was like, what if we make a space thing? Or what if we make laser beams?
Yeah.
It just came back. And of course, because it's a Lucasfilm magazine, they're like, ILM was this. We did this. We were the ones who brought it back. It's because of us. And it's like, okay, I don't know how true that is, but like, all right.
And I guess
fairness, when it came back to, well, I guess the documentary on them was made by them now. Disney.
Right, yeah, yeah.
But like Star Wars did do that. They like brought shit that had not been seen, I guess, like 2001 A Space Odyssey had some like
pretty really good looking effects, stuff. Yeah.
But like the shit that they're doing here is just unseen.
The momentum, the like action of it all. But you know what? Here's what I say. I said that Lucas at the time is like Spielberg 1.0. That's inaccurate. They were both around. I'm gonna say what it was, and this is like I think the best way to characterize what you're talking about is like one is like the Beach Boys and one of them is like the Beatles, and the Beach Boys just put out Pet Sounds. And now the Beatles gotta put out Sgt. Pepper's. Like that's how Spielberg became.
It's like Sonic and Shadow.
Yeah, so just like that. Sonic's like so fast and Shadow's like, I'm going to shoot that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they just started working together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, you know, everybody hates being lied to more than anything. That's like the main thing in Sonic the Hedgehog. Don't lie to a hedgehog.
You just don't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, sidebar.
Ron Howard, Knuckles. I'm going to say it.
You know what? That's true. That's really accurate. He's like kind of, yeah. Like
I'm going to say it. Ron Howard's Knuckles.
No, who's like a mean, is there like an angry director?
Coppola's Knuckles. Dude, Ron Howard is
like
Tails.
James Cameron is probably Knuckles based on like stories.
James Cameron became Knuckles the moment that he was like, yeah, I knew that submarine blew up. I didn't tell anyone because I don't want to ruin anybody's day.
It sounds like he ruined, like.
I heard that on back channels. Dude's tight. Dude made T2.
I don't know how tight that is.
Dude made T2. Come on. Anyway, back to this movie that we were just talking about, Empire Strikes Back, characterized by the lighting, I would say, like in terms of what made the 80s cut super special compared to watching like the one on Disney Plus was like just, man. Like, and I know it's treated very specially by these people, but like the idea was to get it as close to the film experience as possible. And man, oh man, what was going on in this movie was just visually like a feast. Like the shots, I was saying, like look very much more like artsy films from the 70s and 80s. Like the shots are like composed well. There's like crazy, like big machines in the foreground with like steam coming out, and Han Solo's like up in the corner, like doing a crazy pose.
It's the framing is so great. There's so much more motion in the camera. Like the shots, like the shot where they like pivot. I don't know all the word. Like they twist the camera in to like the X-Wing and then the X-Wing takes off in the same shot. Like there's tons of just like little tracking shots in these like ways that just, if you look at the first one, they just aren't really there. And it completely like puts you, it like actually puts you in, like, I feel like I'm intimate with the like Hoth base because I've been like right under one of the landing feet for the Falcon or whatever.
But Hoth base might be the weakest point of the entire movie and the actual construction of it.
Oh, set-wise, 100%.
When watching it, it very clearly is like matte backgrounds and foam.
That was a much more...
And that's
more,
the only... In the original...
Like, I guess least, because like most of it is like... most of it's a hangar. Like, they just, like, chill in the hangar for a lot of it, and then they go to that one room.
It's not like it doesn't work, right?
Right, no, it definitely works, but no matter what, even in this version that's supposed to be, like, the old original version, it very clearly stands out that in the newer ones, they've made some adjustments to make it look more real.
It doesn't even look like a ride. It looks like the line in front of it.
Right, yeah.
Well, and then, like, by the time you get to, like, Jedi, like... Jabba's palace feels like
orders of magnitude
living. Yes. Like you go to every room there, like from every angle you see it. But
let me look at the, budgets of these movies.
Actually. It's like where you and your friends get together to watch the slave girl thrown to the giant monster underneath, you know,
like a
whole party palace.
Yeah, it did. And so I think it was like one of the shots where like Chewie's like howling at them where I was like, okay, they did like CG the Hoth base to be bigger in the newer versions because it was like
100%.
The one they're in is like much smaller than I remember, but I don't know, like for the time it
looks great. It still looks great. It's just the thing out of all of the movie, Hoth base is the weakest set wise.
Yeah. 100%.
But you know, considering most of the movie is like ships with giant red thrusters and things, it's pretty amazing.
The Falcon had great sets before and you see like, whole other side. You get like the inside of it even better. Like
a lot more steam. I love the
the light panels were like everything was so much
on the Super Star Destroyer. There was like a lot of panels of one color.
The Mammoth.
Oh yeah, the Mammoth Star Destroyer had blue lights along the side, except in the front it had like a slightly different color lights.
The Imperial Star Destroyers had green lights.
Yeah, they had like
crazy
haunted mansion ghost lights far out.
Yeah,
it was so cool. The red. From the like engines, like were like a, it felt like a deeper hue or something. Like
it was more blown out. It definitely
just like
I
don't know. It was. It's so cool to see it that way because like both simultaneously, it feels older because the cheaper effects stand out, but it still feels so good because the shit we see now is so fake. It's like so CG that when it's real. Go watch like Starship Troopers again, kids, and you'll be like, wait, why do these like spaceship scenes look so good? And then you're like, because they fucking used models and miniatures and it like slaps. Even what's wild is like stop motion. They used it for the Tauntauns and stuff.
So good.
And it's like, look at like even RoboCop. Like they have some of the best stop motion that I've seen. And you know it's stop motion, but it's still somehow they smoothed it well. It's like the scales too that they jump between for like the Hoth scenes where they're like there are snow locations that they shoot on. And then there's ones where it's like, all right, that's clearly zoomed out for the Tauntaun stuff. And there's parts where it's like a mix of both with the legs. And it's like, how did you fucking pull this off? It's like,
yeah,
goddamn.
It's an impressive feat when you think about the amount of special effects shots they would have to have for a film like this. And considering this is the early 80s.
It's filmed
in 70s, right?
It's gargantuan. It doesn't even matter. Like today it would be a crazy, like even if just building everything practical, just like they did today,
they would never do that.
I know.
That's the thing is today it would never happen.
Even today it would be like the same size movie crew that makes a movie today would be required to make something so big as The Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
It's a huge movie.
Actually. Yeah. And with Dagobah, you have to have...
That's a soundstage,
and it's like...
A water tank, like, and it's a puppet stage.
Yeah. Actually, that is probably the most impressive.
And it's a snake habitat.
Dude, but then there's Cloud City. Like, there's so many insane things.
Oh, Cloud City is sick. Oh, because Cloud City includes the whole final... Everything, like...
It reeks of money compared to the first movie. It's just a polished... George Lucas... This is how you run any business. This is how you run any production. once you have the money to hire somebody better than you,
do it
and let them eat and you will have a great thing.
You know what's crazy about it, though? When you think about each major set or place they filmed, you have Hoth, which is very contained, and most of the outside footage is early special effects. And then you have the inside of a meteor slash slug, very contained. The bridge of the Super Star Destroyer, very contained. Yep. Dagobah, one soundstage. It is, compared to filming out in a desert, compared to doing all these other things, it seems like they're like, okay, put all our money and make this stuff look really cool, but it's going to be on a set somewhere.
Yeah.
And it works.
It works because that's the thing is, like, looking back at this, people just really underestimate like the artifice and language of film. And by putting like the 80s back onto this movie, like making it feel like an old thing again, all those effect shots that George Lucas thinks look bad and needs to fix, like they come together because we've been watching movies our whole lives. So we know what movies from the 80s look like. We understand that language. Even movies like specifically late 70s, early 80s. And
shout out to the Goonies. I love you.
Yeah. And George can't see it because it's his baby, right? Like he can't see it in the context of all those other movies because he's just thinking about the process. But we, the audience, it's like part of the legend of movies. And so when it looks modern and new, it's like weird and quieting almost to look at some of those scenes and then like a really detailed CG model comes in.
Yeah. But the thing is, it's not even that. When you look at some of the newer stuff, they've had to redo it so many times because CG has changed so much that if you were to find like the 97 copy, it's kind of trash. It ruins the movie.
It looks like 90s now.
Yeah.
It's weird.
The like, what is it? The like, yeah, the synchronicity of the era that it's in with the effects make for a, just like you say, like a seamless, it feels right. And it kind of reminds me, cause I like you interact, like they love to really release old games now. And like, mm-hmm. they'll do like remasters where it's just like the old game with like new graphics or
Final Fantasy
something. VIII. Actually yeah. fucking like Twin Snakes. That's not a new one, but like there are tons of games where then you go back and you play the old ones and you would think that it wouldn't work, but then you're like Crash Bandicoot, the original games on the PlayStation are better than that remake because there's no like
the language,
graphical yeah, controller,
the vibe,
like dissonance. It's like, it like yeah. works better.
Yeah, exactly.
The problem is like A New Hope Special Edition is just the worst offender. Like,
I don't even know if it is. Like Return of the Jedi is pretty heinous too.
I haven't watched it. Again, I got like
that song scene is atrocious. Wild,
dude. I have like Laserdisc rips of the other one since college. So like, I don't watch the special editions that much. So I haven't seen the Jedi one that much, but like, yeah, like the shot that everybody talks about is like that where it just covers like that.
We walked over Jabba's tail.
Oh no. Like that like creature just like, as you're like coming into Mos Eisley. And
isn't that a Ronto?
Yeah, probably is a Ronto, but like,
You know what? I like the raps. Yeah. Not going to lie.
It's just like, it sucks. It's all that is like, it just sucks. It
really is like, just so, like when you see the Uncanny Valley or something, it sticks out even worse. It'd be like, if you're playing like Mario 64 and all of a sudden, like a human person, like a photorealistic person, like walked out of a door, you'd be like, what are you doing here? Like, what's wrong with this entire reality? Like, why are you here? This is supposed to be Nintendo 64. Like, why are you standing here? You look real. That's impossible.
This is like the problem that happens in any sort of generational shift where like they, to be able to create these new solutions, they had to understand what existed already, all the limitations, and then how to push it. And by the next generation, that process was already lost. They're just like, we can do CG. So let's just do CG. Like there are, I mean, I'm not going to go to bat for all 90s and early aughts because definitely by the early aughts it got bad. But like Jurassic Park has a bunch of CG, but also a ton of practical, and it like still looks incredible. Well,
and Steven Spielberg didn't go back and like retexture the film quality of the entire film and like make a digital environment of the entire thing and like reinsert dinosaurs.
But he also didn't like, he got this tech and it wasn't like, oh, great. Now we don't have to do it all. It's like only where we can't do the things that we want to do. It's like all tempered with like a deep understanding of what will work and what will, and the end goal is always not to make the cheap. It's like, what's going to make this the realest? Yes. And then now they're just like, we'll just do it in post.
I mean, and we've talked about this before is during that time period, especially during the 90s and 80s, it was like any CG we do, we need to know what those shots are up front. Okay, six shots. We're going to plan for those six and we're going to film around those six.
Yeah, for like a year.
And anything else, if we can't make the camera at the right angle for the right, it had to be perfect. And now they can do everything in post and they don't have to worry about it. And so
Nicolas Cage talking about the like thing he shot for Superman and not even being the same thing that he
yeah, when he saw in the movie, like, he was like, that's not what I did. Yeah. And I,
or like Black Adam, that fucking scene where the fucking ship comes out of the ground and it's like the entire composition is just like, clearly they just didn't have any data to work with, these poor, like excellent animators.
Yeah,
just,
they probably had like a week to get it done. You know what I mean? Like,
Exactly.
And that's what it is. You're absolutely right. It's the at the time, Jurassic Park's a great example. The few CG shots they had to plan for and work to make perfect. And, you know, even for Star Wars, a lot of it is computer, except it's old ass computers, right? It's like when Dykstra was the guy who made it work. He's like, I now use computers to film things. That's mind blowing to think that they, some dude was on like an old ass supercomputer.
Because he did it like freaking, you know, Miyazaki. Like he's like, he integrated it into his process as like a craftsman.
Did in the special editions, do they change? Because like noticing like the snowspeeders, at least in the gunner seats, use like early LED technology. Do they like smooth that over in the special editions to be like a more consistent look, or was that?
I can't speak to that specific thing, but like, I will tell you that like in terms of all compositions in the entire movies of all the movies, like there is like fingerprints. You like, you can't imagine how changed
they are.
Like I wouldn't put anything past them.
Okay.
Especially all the space scenes.
Yeah.
Every space scene is digitally altered.
Just every single one. In this Empire cut that we saw, you can still kind of see the like carding that happens around
TIE fighters and shit. Yeah.
Yeah. So like,
and the blue screen stuff throughout, you like some of the shots.
There are some things
that's definitely removed in the specials. I can see them cleaning it up,
but like that to me is already like so extreme of a thing to do to like a movie that's old.
But you know what's like weird? There's film grain. Like, famously in all this stuff. And so it's like,
people like,
isn't it more authentic? Like if you're, if you shoot on film and there is film grain, is it not more authentic that some of the seams are shown?
Yes, like, exactly.
Like scrubbing out some of those, but leaving others is like, well, why?
It's the difference between Disneyland and Disney World. Again, that I was saying, it's like Disney World is better for more guests. It's like accommodating to more international guests. It has all the same rides, but they're like better and bigger and more expensive. It has like way more space because they planned for it. Disneyland is the same one that opened in 1955, and it's all kind of made by hand and awkward, and it's in the middle of like a neighborhood. But as, and I'm, and you know, I'm biased, but like I feel like the more earnest, like authentic experience is Disneyland, as somebody, you know, who's literally born and raised in Southern California. But it's like vinyl versus CD or something. It's just that same sort of text, like what texture qualities do people deem to be the ones that are culturally valuable and preferred versus the ones that are like, we want to pretend like they don't exist. It's like such a weird, like decision that we all make together watching movies or like getting on rides or whatever.
Yeah.
You had like I saw like a gleam in your eye, like a little like yesteryear. It's gone and passed. And here I am.
Dude, if I could go to Disneyland in 1997 today, I'd be there in a second. You know how cheap that shit was?
Were you going to Captain EO that thing?
Dude, I'll Captain EO. I'll fucking...
Well, not in 70s. That didn't come out until...
1997.
No, he said 1997.
'97.
Captain EO, I don't believe was there in 1997 either, but maybe it was.
I did watch it when they brought it back however many years ago at this point. I don't like how long what I used to think was recent history is now to me.
Yeah.
But...
The 1900s, you mean?
Captain EO, maybe, like, does anyone love that?
Just it's pretty, tangent. It's like, pretty good. It's Coppola.
When it came out, was it like, what is this?
Or definitely like, had a lot of what is this, but it also had a fandom.
It had hype because it was Michael Jackson, George Lucas, and Coppola.
Right. And I see all those
and
things.
And Angelica Houston.
But like, it.
And Hooter.
It's also weird.
Maybe I gotta like rewatch it again, but like, I was like, all right, Captain EO, this thing that I like vaguely remember but people talk about.
I'm like extremely familiar with it, so it's like very different for me. I know how like kind of cheeseball it is.
It's very cheeseball.
But it's really amazingly art directed. Like amazingly.
It is like one of those, it's like, honestly, it's like the fucking 90s Super Mario movie where I'm like, there's a lot of really interesting stuff here. What the fuck am I watching? Like, what is it supposed to be?
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I would go back to that Disneyland in a second. It was so nice. It was so well taken care of and nice and not over visited. You know what I mean? Like when things were good and then they get gradually worse as
if you go at 10 a.m. on a Wednesday right now, it's still atrocious.
Yeah.
Packed.
Crazy. It's like grad night right now.
Yeah.
It's crazy. But yeah, that just goes back to what I'm saying about like there are certain textures and like, I don't know, if you're somebody who doesn't consume a lot of culture, you might not even be able to perceive the value of something like this as I'm trying to explain it, but like educating yourself about an entire like world of culture of like a sector of culture, like cinema or music. If you want to like go deep into like, you know, Gregorian chants, right? Like if you listen to all of them and you really get to know them, you know, you start to notice different things. And I just think that the idea of going back and changing, like it's his right as a creative person to do that, George Lucas, but it's weird that like,
I think it's his right as the, like,
it's legally his right. But I mean, I'm not mad at him for wanting to make his thing better if that's what he wants. But like,
but one of the things all artists have to deal with is the fact that like, you can never make a perfect piece of art.
Right.
You just have to know when to walk away. And his problem is he's for years simply couldn't.
I'm just so surprised that there is
like a war within George Lucas that's different than what we see. And we just like only see the like,
dude,
he makes actions and we have to guess at what he's trying to solve. Because like you say, like when he goes and fixes things, his head is not where we're at. And it's like, why did that shot to you? Why was that a problem to you?
Like imagine.
And why was your solution somehow suitable?
Like, why do we need the CG do back? Like, what was the, like, why did we need that?
I don't know, dude. But imagine, I kind of feel for him. Like, imagine you're the guy who invented Star Wars. Like the thing that you count on in your life as Star Wars, that force, that positive feeling, that just wonderful thing that you love, Star Wars. Imagine you like it just as much as you do right now as somebody who's listening to the show ostensibly is, right? Except you also made it. It leapt from your hands, your mind, right? And then imagine it's 2023. And like think back on your entire legacy and this thing that you wrought across the world and across culture. He's probably got a complex relationship with these movies.
I got a shitty thought that just came to my head that I can't prove, but here's my thought. Well, I'm just thinking about it because already from one of the articles I read, a different George Lucas than the ones that gets quoted from the times he's came out has started to emerge. And I wonder if it's a, like, I let a bunch of other people help out and the special editions are like, cause after that he started to like, the narrative was like me, I had this plan. All these things were executed according to my, kind of like the Emperor. And I don't know if the special editions are his way to like reassert ownership over, well, I mean, he directed A New Hope, but even the ones that he like didn't do all of the things for, the things he didn't direct,
you mean,
and maybe
other
like
two movies. Yeah.
Right. As I'm saying, like, and fiddle with them as some just sort of like weird way to prove to himself or other people that he is.
I mean, based on his choices with the prequels, I feel like some of his ideas of what he thinks are important might be a little skewed, because even in the prequels, there's shots that you're like, why did we need that? Like, what was that shot
he
for?
He really values, I think, and this is another unprovable theory.
Yeah, it's just like,
I believe that George Lucas sees it as like a genre piece first and foremost. And I think that he really, really cares about the tropes, effects, and feelings of those source materials more than we realize, like across the board. That explains why the prequels are like so meticulously like if you like cereals, like adventure cereals from like even earlier than Flash Gordon, like the ones that like 15 years older than the ones that inspired Star Wars are the ones that inspired the Phantom Menace and stuff, right? If you love those, the texture and the way that those things are referential to that is like absolutely masterful. It's like absolutely like nerdily masterful in a way, right? Not in a great way, but in a certain way, you can tell he really loves it.
It's like Sky Captain, the World of Tomorrow is like a throwback to a certain thing. Those are like a throwback to a certain thing.
Yeah, exactly. And like I almost think that the first couple movies would be better if they were silent with like title cards. Like, I think that would be like
the prequels.
Yeah. And they were like black and white. That would be like cool.
Like, no, I'm all right.
But I mean, like, to follow his logic, right? To follow George's logic, right? Like,
I just can't imagine Anakin doing a twirl in the air, and then a title card comes with this, like, that's a neat trick. Like,
can't you? Doesn't it work better?
It sounds like a part, like Wes Anderson in a movie.
Yes.
Like, a vignette, like, would
and
do that.
That explains why all the shots are so weird and wide, because all the sets are really obtuse and, like, conceptual in the same way that they just like paint the corner of a fucking room to look like a Nazi castle or whatever. Like, it's the same thing. He's nailing something. It's just something that no one else thinks Star Wars is besides George Lucas. And I love him for it. And like, he's really not that responsible creatively for much of the stuff from Star Wars that we'd like. He came up with the idea.
But like, he takes ideas that, like, Jedi robes is a perfect example.
Yeah.
That is an idea that no one in the universe had but him, that he's like, well, because his characters were dressed like that, all Jedi.
But
like,
he did it.
The extrapolation's insane,
but
though.
He did it for a movie reason rather than, like, I mean, you gotta
understand.
Remember,
it's just an insane extrapolation.
Well, he stabbed himself with his own blade. I don't know what the right metaphor for this is, but like, what people loved about it so much immediately was it is like a lived in universe that felt like it had its own history. Things made sense. And then he was like with the prequels riffing off different stuff, but like, and I know that some of it was like, well, 30 years in human history, there was this. So let's do like a diner or whatever. And you're like, except that this universe is like ageless. It's like gotten to that point of technology where like it's not an exponential growth curve. It's kind of like a stagnant, like,
absolutely
things are like kind of how they are. And so making big changes is just like,
but that's what
it doesn't feel natural.
But that's exactly what I'm saying about him being slave number one to the genre. Like, the reason there's a fucking Dex's Diner in there is because detectives go to diners, and that's the only reason. And he was
I get that,
but I mean, but that, he doesn't care. Like, that's what I'm saying. He doesn't care. It's the same thing with the Jedi robes. He does not care. He needed an army of Jedis, and he didn't want to design a bunch of different outfits. So he was like, a bunch of Obi-Wan Kenobis. Okay, great. What are we gonna do? We're gonna have like a diner. Okay, we're gonna just take exactly a diner from New York, but everybody works as a robot. Great. Like, boom, we got it. They're going to get it. It's great. It's like a space version. You guys get it. He's not thinking at all about the guide to planets or the guide to vehicles and vessels or even the art direction, really. He's thinking about the concepts, in my mind. That's my theory.
I mean, I'm sure he's not thinking the same thing fans are thinking. I mean, it's very obvious because when the prequels come out, it changes everything that was happening in the years before. Like, the way even lightsabers work. Like, there was no, well, a lightsaber color means this, and this color means this, and this thing, like, that just wasn't a thing. Everyone had different color lightsabers. It was crazy.
Yeah.
It's also like, I mean, he calls it an energy field in A New Hope. And then we know from like George Lucas, well, he adds midichlorians, and then he gets weird, like,
over, like,
I think that like the more like overtly philosophical stuff that you really get with Yoda. Like,
yeah,
maybe that is also like, he struggles with that too, which is why things feel often like clinical and medical with his other.
I absolutely agree with you with that. Yeah.
100%.
And because it's probably like why he excels so much in when he's not directing, when he is like changing technology from an aural, from a visual, from every other perspective is like, and actually I, maybe people like see dislike in others what they see in themselves, whatever that expression is. But like I feel like sometimes I have like a story or character OCD. And I feel like for him, maybe if your theory is correct.
Sure.
He made the original Star Wars by like a certain set of his own rules, like how he was going to take the things that he loved and how he was going to translate them. And like, he couldn't not do that again. It's just, it didn't, all the pieces didn't align in the way that they did for success before. And it just created like,
he's older. He's like more out of touch from like being like a young creative person with like ideas, you know, like the ideas are now also just 20 years older ideas. Like,
you but can admittedly, tell when like a person really like lives the characters that they create. And like, I'm like, he was not that far out from being a young gun. He was still like, he had a couple movies, but like you could feel the yearning of like Luke there. Like you could like get it. And then I don't think there's like any character in the, and you don't have to have this, but like in the prequel, where was like his emotional connection? Which character had it? Like which felt like a real,
right. He loves the concept. He loves the structure. He loves the beats,
but which is why probably like if you, when people that like wax poetic about the prequels, they choose a couple parts and then sort of ignore how it actually played out to be like, they're really smart because it does this. And you're like, well, yeah, technically the story does that, but it's the execution that is like,
well, I was going to say like,
yeah,
when we talk about it, we talk about it from a perspective of having grown up with the originals. But a lot of people who are in their like late 20s now who grew up with the prequels,
never seen them.
They love the prequels. Like they're coming around to actually liking them a great deal, even though for a long time they were told they're not as good as the originals. I'm very curious. I don't think it'll be true. I'm very curious what will happen in 20 years with the other three, but
the sequel trilogy.
Yeah.
How do you even
look? I agree. We don't need to talk about it
with the prequels, but I'm saying like with the prequels, you at least get an entirely new story from jump and characters. Like the sequel trilogies are like too based off old stuff.
They're out
and then
there.
They're
out there, man.
I'm
they're
just saying there. Because a lot of the stuff that Disney pushing is for new things from that new
fans of that era. Yeah.
Yeah. And so what is interesting, I think, is that, and we talked about this before in the olden days, but I always think about this when you compare the originals to the prequels, the idea that if you were to say to someone, who is Qui-Gon Jinn, do not explain his job, versus who is Han Solo, do not explain his job. You can talk about Han Solo for hours, all of his little character intricacies and stuff. Qui-Gon Jinn is like,
you chose the one person that like the actor elevated the character.
Qui-Gon Jinn and Qui-Gon Jinn,
Luke Skywalker, actually, you could, Leia, you could, even Chewie, you could, like Qui-Gon Jinn. What sucks about Qui-Gon Jinn, it's a strictly first movie problem because later they develop Obi-Wan and Anakin more. But that first movie, poor Anakin is like, he doesn't have much going for him. Obi-Wan is in like six scenes. Like
that kind of, I don't watch the prequels a lot, but I forget often and have to be remembered, like how much of their characters the Clone Wars show makes me think of, because then you're like, oh wow, there's like very little of you guys doing anything of the character there. Work.
And Obi-Wan, that goes back to what Alex was saying, is the movies first, in
Phantom Menace has nothing to do, like he's like Luke whiny, but he's like a side character.
He doesn't do anything, he sits on the fucking ship.
Yeah, but like Alex was saying,
oh yeah, he's there because Obi-Wan has to, like,
yeah. Those movies are about Lucas showing off this world. Aren't character based.
No.
And I that does say a lot about like what Lucas values.
Yeah. Like the one that's really character based is the one, like I'm saying, Empire Strikes Back, in a lot of ways, again, is the first Star Wars thing, because it's the one where it's the first one that reflects itself. It's like the first time that we had input as fans who watched it. We as a group.
It is a little bit like the Clone Wars series.
Yeah.
And that, oh, now we're getting the characters. It feels that way for the first time. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, and what I love about it that like other sequels, I don't know, like watch a lot of sequels and maybe it's because like the studios demand that they get made. And so whatever, but like this movie does the best thing a sequel can do, which is like, you know, the characters. You don't need to like a whole world catch up. You just need a quick catch up. And then like we're talking about, it's 2 hours, but it like goes. It is
so
going
fast. Yeah.
It somehow has time to breathe sometimes while constantly doing stuff.
It has like time
while
problems,
also just like
don't care. You just don't care about the time.
It does have major time problems, but
it's the
unimportant.
Same exact yeah. thing that happened.
It has
in Last
time
Jedi.
Problems, yeah. except like, are they like only because they're not like 3 days later? Like it could all take place however long it needs to.
It could, but it doesn't matter because the editing is so good. That's the whole point.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's the whole thing. Like Last Jedi, take it or leave it, right? Like a lot of people had complaints about the very same thing. And maybe because they don't like, maybe because Last Jedi isn't one of the greatest films ever.
But
made.
The one thing it calls to your, Last Jedi, unfortunately calls to your attention, the time taking place, because characters halfway
they're
through
running out of gas,
are yeah. like, not only is there a chase where they're running out of gas, they put like a timestamp on it, but then also another, like a people, third plot people, happens where they leave to go to another yeah, thing.
People leave and come back to the big
but
that, thing.
But that's exactly what I'm
and
saying.
And that's why like, there it's noticeable. And here, still incredible time problems, but you just don't care because it's just, so
just
well
so,
done.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's just done by experts and it's done like, it increases the sample size of our experiment of what Star Wars is like
right.
vastly. And I was trying to say this about the book earlier too, in the last episode about the Tumblr of like Star Wars D&D scenarios being widened a little bit. And that was like the vibe more than like telling like a really structurally amazing story, you know, because that really isn't what they did. They just sort of like kept it in motion, you know,
they just find, which I guess is like what any movie is about, but like because it's like a space fantasy, they're so creative the way that they like just have these characters, they all have to go on their arcs, but they like have a weird visit to a snow planet and a battle, and then one guy goes and meets a Muppet in a fucking bog planet and does a whole thing there. They other guys go like in an asteroid field, they sit in a fucking space worm for a bit. Like it's just like it's just like, all right, their characters are going on like pretty good trajectories, and then they also happen to go on like pretty crazy little side missions and stuff, yeah. and it all like comes together.
It's funny while we're talking about it to look at Rise of Skywalker also, which I don't know if you guys will agree with me. I think is an incredibly well-paced movie.
False.
It's just
false.
It's like, how do I say this?
It is two movies crammed into
That's
one.
That's true, but what I mean is the action of the movie moves along very well.
I disagree.
I could like, not I, disagree more.
Like,
yeah.
like I think Force Awakens is right. easily.
You
know
I'm never talking about the sequel trilogy. You guys fucking hate this.
But listen, like,
just not, it's not even worth bringing it up. You guys won't even. It's not even worth it.
I'm about to explain why. Like, at least in the Force Awakens, for the beginning, they like things get to like land. That movie like never stops.
Yeah.
In never like pauses
to
breathe
every
because movies you
moment.
Have to. Otherwise, it's just like.
But that's exactly what I'm
Moments
saying.
Moments don't land, though, where it's like, a terrible thing just happened. Oh, we're moving on. Oh, no, that's fine, actually. Nothing bad happened. Yeah. Oh, another terrible thing. Actually, never mind. Nothing bad
that,
actually
that's
happened.
It, that's
it moves
exactly
so quickly.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, the movie is, it never feels like it stops moving. And it's almost like both of them looked at Empire Strikes Back and decided, like, what the thing was about the structure of that movie that worked really well and, like, tried to make that be their template. And Last Jedi has like an Empire Strikes Backness to it, kind of by design and kind of by like the drama of it, right? Like just kind of like by the fact that it was like a very divisive sort of like middle movie in a trilogy. And then instead of being a Return of the Jedi, which it kind of also is, Rise of Skywalker kind of ends up being more of like an alternate second movie in the trilogy also. And they're just like two weird, almost Empire Strikes Back.
If anything,
it's
all
like
these,
when we did Sucker for Love and you could like go back and try different outcomes.
Yeah.
And they're just vastly different.
Yeah. All these movies are reflections clearly of the director who was in charge of them. And it shows you how they like to make stuff. And that even talking back to the prequels, Lucas values the world building versus the character stuff. Whereas you have like J.J. Abrams wants to like, here are my callbacks to things from previous stuff. Well, Rian Johnson was like, I want to try something totally different. And I'm going to like give us our second movie vibe, but I'm also going to tell a different, like you can see where they wanted to go. It doesn't make it good or everyone has to like it. But what it means is that it's very obvious to see what people value in movies. If you just look at the Star Wars 9 movies.
And I think like Empire does what it like.
It's number one. It'll always be the best.
Do you know why? Because actually characters are always more important than plot.
And you know what
else? The only plot is they get caught. And they have to fucking scatter. That's like the plot. And then, sure, he's told he has to go to Dagobah and train. But like, other than that, it's just them like reacting to situations and learning and reacting and growing and then doing other stuff. The other ones are like, all right, we got to go here. We got to go catch a guy. We got to go spring Han from Carbonite. We got to go meet up with the fleet. Then we're going to go to Forest Moon Endor. And then we got to do the big battle.
But you
and
know
then
what else is different, too, is that George was present. Like, it was the thing that needed to happen in the sequel trilogy that didn't, is that there was a force in George Lucas who was controlling these like directorial voices to make them still be Star Wars. Whereas, you know, you just got like, you got like JJ playing Star Wars games in the first one. And like, maybe that movie would have been a better first movie to a different trilogy. And then you got Rian Johnson, who just, JJ was not around. Like there was no
overarching. No one was controlling the story. Yeah.
And it wouldn't have mattered because JJ doesn't have answers,
but that's the
just
whole
questions.
But that's the whole thing. It's like
I watched Lost.
By literally his own. I'm not even just dunking on him.
No, the mystery
that
box.
He like literally is like famously, this is what I do.
Yeah. This is his
don't
TED
be
talk.
Surprised.
This is his TED talk, but there's nothing wrong with that intrinsically. It's just that
it is, if you are going to do things that need to pay off.
I don't think anything needs to pay off, but that's the whole thing. Like the point is there was something that we liked about Star Wars. There was something in the energy of that.
Can I be honest?
Yeah.
The first movie I think captured the minds of, you know, the world, and that was new and creative and fun. Yeah. The second
and it was
movie,
like the quintessential hero's journey. Like, yeah. It was like to the T.
And the second movie is what we started this episode on. It is actually Star Wars for the first time.
Yeah.
It is Star Wars.
Will they, won't they? Who are these guys?
Yes, but like, what's important, what is gonna happen to just like how much next? We love Andor, it is not about anything but the characters.
Yes.
And the last movie is sadly just like point A, point B. They keep going. We got to get to the end. And then from that point on, Star Wars vanishes for years and it doesn't come back until Timothy Zahn is like, let me tell you a story. And that story is very heavily character based.
Yeah.
And
there's a few little nuggets of Star Wars around, right? But they're all,
but it's all about the characters. And it's about the drama of their lives. Yeah. And it's what people I think fell in love with. And then the back and for the pendulum swing of what Star Wars is like, is it the ships? Is it the vistas? Or is it actually like, we want to know what's going on with these characters. Like, I want to see Obi-Wan losing it, right? I want to see that stuff versus like, let's do some cool jumps, Anakin. You know what I mean? Like, it's not what Star Wars is to me. But again, it's all
my
personal preference.
Doubled since the last time you met me.
Yeah, like people love the Tartakovsky. Is that the guy?
Tartakovsky.
They love that. There's no dialogue and it's just cool fights and stuff.
Oh, the Clone Wars micro series is like the best thing of the.
People. But the thing is like that is also
it might be the best Star Wars.
There's thing. Not really any character work going on there.
There is, but it's like, look at this mythological figure that is Mace Windu. Look at him move through the air. Look at how strong he is.
And that's a different style of Star Wars. And it depends on what you love. Like for me, that was cool, but it wasn't like, I'm so glad I watched that. I was like, all right, I watched it. That was neat, but it didn't get me. And again, it's about personal preference. But I think this is the moment where Star Wars became special. And ever since then, it's just existed.
Finally had like dialogue written by somebody who can write a screenplay. The guy wrote Big Chill. Mm-hmm. Once casted. You know what I mean? Like that's a great movie.
Yeah.
The back and forth is so timelessly like good banter, like Leia and actually fucking everybody on there is just like back and forth. Vader is just having the best worst day.
He's stunting just on everyone.
Anybody
nice
like
nice of you to join us, you sons of bitches.
He's like, we think that he's so badass. He's a fucking comedian in this too.
Yeah.
But also he'll kill you. Like he's the greatest film villain because of this movie.
Yes.
He's a sick villain in A New Hope for sure. This is when he's like, this is why you can have me forever. When people just try and hit this, you can get comics that run for years off this energy.
He's hilarious.
Yeah.
He's hilarious.
But don't dare fucking laugh at him because he'll also
Dracula
kill you.
Dead and loving it.
That's but also in the first movie, it's almost the Tarkin show.
Yeah.
Go back and watch it. Vader has like two really cool scenes, but the vast majority of it is Tarkin just stealing everything.
They weren't sure who the fuck that guy was. And they're positive that Tarkin could be whatever because they were just going to blow him up.
Yeah. And now it's actually Vader, and it's the Vader
everyone fell in love with.
Yeah.
For like Tarkin.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. then they were like, oh, we'll just make him also smart.
Like Lego was just like a building set until they made like Lego Ice Planet or like Lego, which is ironic, or like Lego yeah. Space.
With the Spaceman. I love Spaceman. The original Spaceman Lego.
Was it like the Night Castle that was like their first?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Same like, one. Wait a second.
You start to realize like, oh, that's what Legos is. That's what Empire Strikes Back is. Is they're like, okay, we see this, and this was before movies got totally corrupted by money. Like this was like when it was like an earnest, like, hey, you like good job, sport. Have a little bit more money this time. Now don't spend all of it.
Yeah.
And George Lucas was like, I got you. And made like triple Star Wars. Like, you know what I mean? That's what he did. Is he basically made like Star Wars triple strength. And that's what Empire Strikes Back is.
Mm-hmm.
And the ending is unbelievable. The last like 20 minutes of that movie is like I would be shaking walking out of that theater in 1980.
Yeah.
Like, I is not a good ending.
I wish that like they would do this more like now the three-tiered battle like the which is really like Return of the Jedi has that like is the new de facto Star Wars where you're like we gotta have boots on the ground today, we gotta have ships in the sky and like a lightsaber fight
seem like hours.
Yeah, like and then here they were like clear the field, we're just it's the Luke and Vader show, and then like I mean they're like do some stuff with the other people but it's like really that's what the thing is. And oh, it's so like refreshingly concise and good. And even that is like, let's just have like the coolest laser sword fight in the coolest arena and then just have it be.
And the lights.
Every two movies of character growth and dynamic just like expressed.
All pays off in like
and then
5 minutes.
Like, yeah. I'm your daddy, bitch.
Yeah. That which America talked about for like 2 years.
Yeah. And it's wonderful because they bring back Obi-Wan, they have Yoda, they have all these masters. They hint that like maybe there's more going on here, and then Vader is like, "Yo, I'm your dad." And everything you thought you knew, you're now like, "Wait, do we even trust those old guys?" Like what is going? There's so much left open, and you're absolutely right. When that ended, we talked about it while watching the movie. People didn't even believe it. Yeah. They were like, that can't be real. That's not, that didn't happen.
That's like how Luke was. Like, yeah. They really were like that.
No! Search your feelings. You know it.
That's impossible!
Yeah, but that isn't because.
And because of that, like 90 million movies were like, and now we really have to make sure that the villain somehow ties into.
But that's not because it was Cloud City looked cool or Hoth was awesome. It's because they made an emotional connection between Vader and Luke in five minutes. Really? Yeah, we had the whole thing of him being like, I'm training to do this so I can beat Vader because he killed my dad. And then they're like, fooled you. And it's so powerful in that moment. You're just like, I can't believe they got away with it. It's because from the minute they hit Cloud City to the end of that movie, it's like 25 minutes.
Yeah.
It's so fast.
Yeah.
The climax of the film with Luke being like, Ben, why didn't you tell me? To the end of the movie is less than 5 minutes.
He gets shredded. He gets absolutely shredded at the end of that movie. Do we want to go through the movie? We went through the book.
Everyone know the book is the movie. Everyone knows
it's a little different. Yeah. Like things I wanted to point out, like we were talking about how the Emperor is basically Snoke in the book. He's like a huge man.
He's a bust body.
He was in this too, but
you don't see his whole body though.
There's only one side shot where they really show you the scale.
Yeah. But he's not, he's just his head. It's not.
And also the whatever's going on with his face.
Oh, dude, he looks
the
like a frog,
eyes man. To like the eyes and mouth seem separate from the
Google
rest
it.
Of us. It's so
Google
crazy.
It, listener. It's a weird one. I thought it still looked like it's Ian like McDermott, but it isn't him.
It's not him, and they definitely like had him try to like do some of that stuff, but it almost looked like they cut out the mouth and eyes.
Yes.
And
like, yeah, it looks like two shots.
Put weird goggles or something. It's very creepy.
The way that it moves, if their goal was to be weird as fuck, they nailed it.
It really looks like Lynchian. It doesn't look like a big budget special effect at all. It looks like a weird like Tim and Eric bit.
But also, they also keep the Emperor, though, in this weird state of... He could be, in theory, very similar to the Emperor that we got in the first Star Wars book. There's nothing in this movie that says the Emperor has any sort of crazy powers, has anything going on. All we know is that Vader's like, Luke, join me. We'll kill the Emperor, take over the galaxy, reestablish order.
Yeah, they don't like laugh at the Emperor in the movie the way that mm-hmm. they do in the book. So as far as you can tell, he's the big boss. He is the boss.
But there's no evidence that he's powerful. There's no evidence that like he's anything more than just an old man who runs everything.
Yeah.
And he's like, yo, I think that Luke Skywalker guy, we should look into him. And Vader's like, yeah, sure. But there's nothing about him that says this dude shoots lightning out of his hands. Like, yeah. It just
or
isn't
maybe
there.
Just, no. Maybe just like Super Vader.
But what they do, and maybe they did or didn't know, but they did know that he was like more powerful than Vader at this point because it's in the book that came out before this. But what they did was they gave you another Force user who was the most powerful Yoda that isn't a warrior.
Right.
So that like, maybe people were like, maybe people could have dialed in like, oh, he's like an evil old wizard. We know that you can be even more powerful without a lightsaber. Like that's not the only way to be powerful. And in the first movie, Vader talks about how much more powerful the Force is compared to this planet destroying thing, but you don't like get a sense for it. But this one, they give you all that extra bit about like, yes, they say that it's an energy field that exists everywhere, but like Yoda is like, watch, like I can show you. Size is irrelevant. Like you can, it's just about your command of it and your like understanding of it.
I totally forgot he literally pokes him as like, yo, flesh bag, that's nothing. Like we are luminous beings. I was like, holy shit, Yoda is Yoda's coming out high, swinging.
Dude.
Yeah.
Ready, dude. Yoda knows what he's talking about. And I love the characterization of Yoda. Like talking about the actual Yoda puppet, like, looking at this version of him, he's definitely like rough around the edges. His eyes don't always look the right direction. He kind of like,
I like that though.
That's what I mean. He has like no movement on the back when he's like in wide shots, but like he feels so much like he's in the world. He feels so much like a living creature. It's very much the Jurassic Park effect.
I don't like the later stuff in Mando, but what I will never argue with in like that is that they found a way to continue that legacy. Like, what's his, like, the guy that he meets in the first season that is, like, a
Grogu.
Puppet.
Grogu.
Not Grogu. Yes.
Grogu.
Grogu is a good example where he's, like, a puppet. Like, they do that again where, like, it's okay that, like, you can kind of see that they're, like, robots, but that they're not CG and that they infuse the character via, like, Nick Nolte or, like, some other actor. Mm-hmm. Like, it's okay. It reminds me, we probably talked about this a million fucking times on this podcast, but I talk about it all the time with Alex when we like rewatched Kill Bill. Like the point of those fight scenes and other shit was not to be the most realistic physics, but it was like to have a consistent vibe and a tone, and the like understanding of it and like leaning into it makes it real. And like Yoda does have the little bug eyes every now and then, but like, motherfucker, that guy has more emotion, more genuine emotion in his fake face than every actor in the prequel put together.
It's like
crazy.
It's like going back to like change the eyeballs in Rick and Morty from like the scribbles to like regular circles because scribbles are messy. It's like it completely ignores the fact that like the scribble eyeballs and like the messy art style kind of like define the character of the show. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the reason that it's so successful, the Nick Nolte character in Mando or anything like that, where they go back and do a practical effect, and why even in Indiana Jones, in the Dial of Destiny, there's like certain shots that just really benefit from being practical. Like it's because those things, Indiana Jones and Star Wars and a lot of things from that time period, like the expectation is that the creatures behave and look like that in a style way, not a technology way. You know what I mean? And that's something that might have changed over the years, because at one point it was apex technology. But as Star Wars sort of marinates or steeps in our consciousness, more and more people exist who have seen Star Wars who did not grow up in the 70s and understand the context. And so now in 2023, looking back, you see something like that Nick Nolte alien and you're like, that's Star Wars. You're not thinking to yourself, oh my gosh, an authentic 1970s style prosthetic animatronic like makeup thing, right? And so that I think is something worth talking about, when especially when talking about Yoda, because famously they changed Yoda
in episode one.
Like they gave up on the puppet and went to a CG model because the CG model was better at looking like an old 70s puppet than a real puppet from the 2000s that was cutting edge. Because that Yoda technically is a better puppet. He's like a better, he's like a more real, he looks.
Wait, episode two, he went fully CG.
No, episode one, he's fully a puppet. And then they went back. That's afterwards. What I'm saying. And they erased the puppet completely and replaced him with a CG model.
But wasn't that after, wait, that you're was, saying in the theater?
In the theater, episode one.
Are you sure? Well, you know what? We're going to like
episode We'll get one. There. We'll watch
I thought
it.
I yeah. remembered watching episode one and him was a puppet.
He's complete.
Puppet.
He's completely
a puppet. He's like a not. Weird gold puppet in episode one.
He's yeah. completely yeah. a puppet in episode one. And then.
But
in,
for the special, like in, for the re-releases?
In like the Blu-rays or something. Yeah, they just went back and completely got rid of that puppet and replaced him with a full CG Yoda because it looks more like Yoda.
Oh, I guess because it's like more consistent with the model too.
Because they made a more realistic looking Yoda puppet that just didn't look like Yoda. It's like the exact thing I'm talking about. They were like, that doesn't look like Star Wars anymore because that's a fucking 90s, 2000s puppet instead of like the 70s shitty puppet that Yoda is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like probably if you think about it, because he was only ever on Dagobah, like he was like his skin color, like they probably
never
like,
had a shower.
They designed him to like yeah. perfectly reflect light yeah. in a low light condition. And then they're like, well, you know, in broad daylight,
she looked like a vampire.
It looks so hot anymore.
Yeah. But honestly, like, I think that Yoda puppet was like apex art direction.
It was like,
it just missed out on a concept, which I think was more important than they realized, which is that like that texture of the 70s is absolutely part of Star Wars to the people who watch it.
It's the reason why when you look at the various Star Trek properties, Star Trek seems weird when they update it more and more to look more and more modern, because you think of Star Trek as either from the 90s with like a carpeted bridge, or you think of it from the 60s where it's like old ass TVs and it changes the way it is.
I'm sure that it lost a bunch of fans when the J.J. Abrams one came out, even though it was like 60s, yeah. just because it looked too
new. Yeah.
It, I mean, it like doesn't look, it looks too hip. It doesn't also doesn't have the soul of Star Trek.
It's a great movie.
The man even was like, I wanted to make Star Wars.
Yeah.
And then he got to make Star Wars. So it's a great good
movie.
For him.
The Star Trek movie is great. It's just not really that Star Trek-y, but that's not the point.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But I mean, it's the same stylized choice that is made in, I mean, even the Clone Wars animations, even Rebels, every animated show has a different style they've chosen to go with, but still at its core, you're like, this is Star Wars.
Yeah.
You get it.
They know what they're aiming for now.
Yeah.
But that was really, I think, something that that's starting to come online in their minds in Empire Strikes Back is like they're starting to see the aesthetic of Star Wars rather than kind of spacey, kind of fantasy, whatever they were doing for the first movie where they were just pulling it out of their ass. Now there's like a Star Wars flavor that they're now aiming for. It's interesting.
Yeah.
What else do we need to talk about? Lando is... I was surprised because
still the best.
I love Lando. The
I love
most.
Lando.
Lando so is just an incredible cat. He like, you just sometimes when you introduce new characters into like sequels, they're like, I probably get this way where I'm like, who's this fucking new person? It's just like in the mix. I don't like it. They don't play well. Lando is just like almost more Star Wars than anybody else.
They said, who is the most Han?
They're yeah, like, they're like, somehow we need
a better Han, a bigger, crazier, more over the top Han. And from moment one, he's on screen. He's like, Leia.
Yeah.
I'm like, let's make a Han that is as suave as Han probably thinks.
Yes.
And they cast the most suave human being, it's arguably perfect.
So charismatic.
It's
yeah.
so perfect. And I really liked it also watching it this time because I forgot, like, for some reason in my memory, he was much more well received by the crew and kind of like they were kind of into his digs and kind of enjoying Cloud City.
Everyone hates him but Han.
It's so funny that they all are like, this guy, every time he comes in a room and then leaves, they're like, that guy sucks.
Han, he's like, yeah. no, that's Han's Lando. Like, no, he's a good
cool.
guy.
Yeah. Han is like, no, what? He's cool.
It's like when Larry David gets mad because people think George is an asshole. And he's like, no, he's not. And like, I'm George. Like, it's like that. It's like that same vibe.
Yeah.
It's funny.
Also, in fairness, he's like so friendly and they've just been like through the ringer. So they're like, we got here. Our droid went missing magically. And mm-hmm. you're just like way too charming. But
it's just, I just remember him being so much more charming and like Leia was like, oh, Lando. But that is like not how it is at all. Leia's like, I don't like Lando.
Most of it is Lando just being like, Leia, you look good in that outfit. Yeah. Leia, why don't you come to dinner with me? And it's just like,
of course, all of you are invited, but
yeah. it's really the one I want to see. Yeah, also, like, he also in the end is just like, and I'm wearing Han's clothes for the last shot.
You know what?
It's so weird.
I think the implication is, I think the actual joke, genuinely, is that because we don't think of it as Lando Calrissian's ship that much. Like, it totally is. They say it in Empire Strikes Back, but like, we don't think of it that way. I think he's like low-key wearing his own clothes again, that he got off his ship because he's got them back finally. He's like, it's like a slight roast on Han that he's wearing his old clothes, like in the same way, like if you're, you saw your girlfriend in your shirt, your ex-girlfriend.
Oh, it's like when he got on the ship, he like didn't have time to clean all of his clothes out. And so Han's like, oh, it's kind of a nice jacket.
Yeah.
Now it's mine.
But it also kind of lends the idea that Han being the only person who's like, he's a good guy. Han is kind of like Lando light when you think about the way he tries to seduce Leia and all that stuff. And so the idea of everything about Han is Lando-esque, but like the lighter version, the fact that they would have the same rough nice clothes guy, yeah. is actually very funny.
They're just like, there's that old like bit that like every comedian wishes they were like a rock star and every rock star wishes they were a comedian. Han and Lando are like, they kind of think that they're the other thing.
Yes, yes.
Like Lando definitely thinks he's like more noble and whatever than he is. And like Han thinks he's a lot suaver than he is.
He's not.
And he also thinks he's like a better businessman, but he fucking sucks.
Yeah.
So it like totally fits, but it also is like, it's kind of beautiful because to this point, even if you don't haven't read the books and you don't know that like they characterize the Millennium Falcon as like a fucking Honda Civic of a car or like some shitty thing, everybody hates it. And even Lando's like, oh, my old ship. Han is the one that like sees the Millennium Falcon as for like the beauty that she is. Like it even, I mean, he's flying it in the end and he's like, I hope you didn't mess with my ship or whatever. But like, Han deserves the money. Like they are right for each other. It's like they are meant to be each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the entire Cloud City, like sort of like essence is like supposed to be like the Emerald City, but like false. And I just love that.
I think you said that when we were watching and I never thought of it that way, but especially with like the matte paintings and the other special effects. It was like, yo, it is.
I felt like 30s texture in the way that the matte paintings were maybe like, I would say like a little faker looking in Cloud City, like on purpose in a way where they made the buildings in the background look like they were painted in the 30s to give it a little bit of like 30s filmmaking texture. I might be completely giving them too much credit, but it really feels like you guys were saying, I think Metropolis. Stuff
it
like
has that. Metropolis
that's
vibes.
Like the vibe.
Yeah.
But it has like the physical texture of the film Metropolis. Yeah. Also. Yeah. Like the quality of the backgrounds is the same. It's very, very interesting.
But at the same time, the clouds, Davis the entire time was like, these clouds are amazing. Who shot this?
I didn't end up looking it up, but like they looked too good to be like matte paintings, but then also I've seen some like artwork where you're like, wow,
yeah.
wow, whoa. You did those clouds oh my really God. Well. So like they had to have been like backlit. They had a like life and color to them that seemed like you can't like draw that many lumens,
right?
Like, you know, in paint or something. Like it like had something to it. But I want to go back and just see the special edition Cloud City shots. Not even just like literally the shot of the beautiful ass station that we saw like six times at every time of the day was a beautiful vibey shot that was entirely different every time.
Yeah.
And I don't remember Bespin having that. I don't remember every time I seeing it.
It's different.
It being a different like chill wave background. Like,
yeah, it's thing. It's different. It's different. Like the special edition Cloud City is just heavily edited, heavily changed just to upgrade the like technology that is responsible for creating the environment. And I honestly think same thing with the hangar, how the size of the hangar changes your mental picture of what's going on.
Like, in Hoth?
Yeah.
It Hoth felt so much smaller.
Yeah. Hoth felt like World War II claustrophobic. Whereas, and same thing with Cloud City feels much more like apartments in the 70s and not like it feels in the special editions at all.
So there's plenty of photos online. I just looked up one and I'll just pass this to you, to Davis. There's multiple different edits, but there's one shot of Cloud City that's an interior shot and you can see the different changes they made. At one point they remove a window. At another point they literally remove a full wall and they're running outside.
That's the one that I'm thinking of. That it's just all exterior.
Oh, I hate that.
And it looks weird. Like, never, it doesn't look
never,
as good.
You would never blink
2011? So that was before they... Why were they still touching things?
That was the Blu-ray release.
Why?
Remember when they added the blinking Ewoks?
They?
It was not...
They? It was fucking George.
He didn't, like, go in there with a mouse and, like, do it himself. Like, there's a team of people who did it.
He's the one who made him do it.
Yeah, okay, sure.
I'm just saying, like, why? Was it to be like, oh, we'll make this like seem bigger in scope?
So to give you an example of what Davis is looking at, there's four images. One is the OG. One is a different colored version. One is one where the backgrounds, the windows are different. And one is where there just is no wall. But it's the exact same shot of Lando running around the corridor.
Yeah. And it's supposed to be him. It's like he's running outside.
Yeah, it's like a totally different. That's what I mean. It changes your entire mental picture of what's going on in the movie.
It is really
which interesting. Which to me is so strange.
But it also makes me question.
I was specifically talking about literally the wide shots, like the establishing shots of Cloud City. Because it's always looked cool, but I was like, are you the coolest looking?
They CG the hell out of flying? It later. It becomes big time, like flying, floating city, which makes, again, it makes you question if there's, in the originals, there's no outside shots of them like hanging outside. It's all inside. It makes you wonder, except for the landing pad, what is the breathing conditions like? In the newer ones, everyone's outside. Everyone's chilling outside. Like Cloud City, they're X number of thousand feet in the air and just fine.
I sort of got the feeling that wasn't the vibe with Cloud City before.
Right. Like, you had to be inside. Sure, they were on the platform, but they got inside. He's like, let's get inside. It's crazy. It's windy.
Yeah. It's like not a good environment.
Yeah. I mean, it could, they're also in atmosphere because it's cloud. I actually don't really know. Bespin is a gas giant.
Yeah.
We know later that it's that. It's just a bonnet. I guess also back then they were probably a little bit less like, there's sounds in space. So they were like, there's atmosphere here.
Yeah.
Shut up.
Also,
they went out into space. They were in a space slug, but they like went out and all they had were like just an oxygen mask.
Great point. Yeah. There's no gravity issues. Yeah.
That's no fair. Gravity. No like freezing. And
mm-hmm. That's true.
But it was inside his gut and he's a little warm boy in there.
It's pulp. You know, it's that pulp. Also, Lobot looks like Principal Strickland from Back to the Future.
100% he does.
What else?
Okay.
We got the old Boba Fett voice. I was surprised how much it sounds like
it does Emperor sound Morrison. Like him, yeah.
At least looking at the three different emperors, at least they like when they changed it to Ian McDiarmid, they like made it at least look
like the emperor.
Like the right, they like color corrected it to look better. Yeah. But even in the picture, even if you look at a picture of him, you know what his fucking eyes remind me of? Sandman, what's the guy that wears the glasses
that has the teeth for eyes?
The Corinthian.
The Corinthian.
It does look like that.
It kind of looks like that. It's fucking.
It actually looks like a Dave McKean like illustration of the Corinthian, like from the cover of a Sandman
comic. Is that what he? Okay.
It really has that like
Her slip eyes.
What's that guy? Gustav Klimt. It has like a Klimtian vibe.
He has this weird bug. Again, if you have the time to watch the original, the eyes, the mouth look like they are not from the same body as the nose and the like cheeks. It's very trippy, and it adds like a creep factor to it that I think.
What I'm thinking, it's like a skin suit. Are you like some gross dark force creature that's like wearing the body like a symbiote or a host or something that's like inside of him, and then like
Arnie Sugar,
honestly, yeah,
like an Egger suit,
like in not joking way, that's like what I meant, like that kind of thing where like underneath it all is
it's whatever it is, it looks cool, and I love the original look.
Can we just take a pause
really quick, sidebar, to just shout out the actress who plays both Edgar's wife in Men in Black and the bus driver in Forrest Gump. She's great. She's in Seinfeld too.
Sure.
What's the actress's name?
I don't know.
Okay, then great.
Damn.
Good job. Shout her out.
Damn.
I wish I could give her that shout out.
My recent, which is now like 6 years, obsession with like cosmic horror and Lovecraftian stuff, plus the description of the cave from the book version.
Yeah.
I'm just like, there is a, like an untouched, like true, and then maybe they do some of it a little bit in the stuff, but like cosmic horror, dark side. Like there is there's like a version of that that's yet.
That really seems like the most
fully,
untouched. Yeah.
But like the way they describe it is like the dark side of the force is like living or decaying in a like different way than just like anger. It's like, ooh, it's something else.
It's harrowing. It takes you. Siobhan Fallon Hogan.
There we go.
Oh, good job. it completely like slaps. It always has slapped. I loved applying the book extra knowledge to this, whether or not like that's actually what they meant.
Mm-hmm.
It happens similarly enough that I like want to, believe that, or it just colors it in interesting ways. And fuck, that movie is so good.
Yeah.
It's funny too. Like the showdown with Luke and Vader, it seems kind of rushed. It seems kind of like they just kind of wrote it once and they did it almost like it. I always think about that scene as like something they like threw in as a daily or something like that to like sneak it through, because it was like kind of like a sensitive scene where he just comes out and he's just like,
oh, you mean the last shot? I was like, there's no way the entire Vader,
that whole scene is
The fight is amazing. Like the fight is like the best choreographed thing.
Right. Okay.
What I love about it is that it's a comic book fight. Like
it's like a symbol.
It's not trying to be, because when you watch symbolic. Like real life fighting now, you're like, by the way, like watch like the UFC, like people fighting doesn't actually look cool.
It looks really like,
it's
they
like
just
people trying
really
to die a lot, and it looks like not cool. But this is like the apex of like how you feel. When I like fight in my dreams, I don't know it's if like you guys sequence. Do this. I fight in like slow motion, and the moves are always like,
you do a lot of dream
exaggerated.
Fighting? I did a lot of stick fighting as a kid. Yeah. We'd have our lightsabers and they'd be sticks, and it would be roughly the same because you didn't want to actually hurt your friend.
Yeah.
So you would do like pew, pew, pew. But it wasn't like, was.
They like,
that's what it's like. Yeah.
And they like have mastered, they really fucking master in the next one, like collateral lightsaber damage, where they're like, first one, they're like poking each other. Here, when you watch this, I bet they were like,
yeah, when Vader slices the like thing off,
or
the
like,
famous one.
Even they're just like hitting anything.
Walls,
like stuff's hissing.
I used to think the railing
is awesome.
This even reminds me like they like their version of Squibs, where like now they're like, oh, we ILM or whoever did it, they're like
sparks.
When you shoot people, we now shoot sparks. When you hit a wall, we're gonna pipe smoke. It like elevates it to another level that I didn't even appreciate.
Yep. Yeah. I also like in the non-special edition really sort of loved the scene of the like trash throwing scene that Vader does. That's like kind of weird. I always thought it was awkward when I used to watch it as a kid, because it looks kind of just like a bunch of things on strings flying at Luke. But something about it was very like operatic and dramatic watching it.
The music.
Oh yeah, the swelling vocals and if you take out the music, again, John Williams putting in work. If you take out the music, it literally just looks like Luke is getting beat up by briefcases. He's like, ow, stop it.
Literally.
It isn't that great, but the music and everything involved with it, you're suddenly just like, yo, he's overwhelmed. Get out of there, Luke.
It really works. Yeah. It's the same thing as the, as Davis is saying about the lightsaber. It's like, he's not in that moment, like doing his best and being athletic. It's like a dance. It's like a, oh no, the turmoil of my body is the turmoil of my spirit. Like happening in real life. It's awesome.
Yeah.
What else do we need to say about this movie?
Well, actually, it's already made a bunch of money. Dude.
The hand sound effect was really good.
Oh, the little click, click, click. Yeah,
and like
that one's great.
Just the whole roboticsness of that hand is like really forward thinking.
If we're going to talk about the.
When I was a kid, I was like, oh, I would love to have like a robot hand. Think about how cool that would be.
I don't know if it's the robot, but Chewie's face. Shout out to all the work that went into his different expressions. There's so many micro things that he does. He's not even the main focus of the scene, but if you look in the background, he's doing crazy facial expressions. It's so good.
Chewbacca is like, so I'm like just so fascinated by him as a like non-speaking character that has dialogue that other people react to. That is so important to this. And like, literally I cannot think of another character that has the amount of importance and screen time that Chewie does, but you never like get to expressly hear what he says.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty crazy that like, to me, like when I think, you know, back on the entire movie of Empire Strikes Back, how many times I've seen it, hundreds of times, the like moment of Zen, like moment in that movie that always sticks with me, speaking of Chewbacca, is like right after the probe droid gets blown up. There's like this moment.
He's like,
There's like this moment that is like between Han and Chewie from like across the thing from each other, where they're both just like.
You talking about where he's got like the ghost.
Yeah.
Fake,
yeah. Yeah. Like, yeah. The snow on his face. Yeah.
In the fucking book, it's because they did it like. Actually, I don't know if this is that, but do you remember like in the book there, they have more of that scene and they're like, you get his attention, I'll shoot. I'll get his attention, you shoot. Like, they had a bit, so I don't know if that's left over from that or if it's just like a...
I think it actually is.
Yeah, because Han pops up behind it. Chewie takes the first shot, yeah.
And then after your time, I was like...
Burr! Yeah, they just have this moment together, and it, like... I don't know why, it just feels so realistic to me. I've always loved that moment in Empire Strikes Back. If you go watch it right now...
It's like the Parka in the Force Awakens scene.
Yeah, exactly the same thing. Exactly the same level of power.
It might also be because... It might be because you don't hear him.
Yeah.
That, like, you... That means, like, you can interpret that into something way different.
It just...
But it's, like, so... It could be accurate, too.
It just feels human. Just feels like just two buddies communicating.
Leia, the things that Carrie Fisher's doing, again, facially, expression-wise, is comedy gold.
Flaring her nostrils.
Comedy.
Like, being, like, so pissed.
Every scene where the ship doesn't jump into hyperspace, everyone else is panicking. When they're being shot at, everyone's like, and furious. She's so over it. It's hilarious.
Furious.
Again, everything played for comedy, 3PO R2 are just pure comedy in this, but not overplayed, not goofy.
They're barely in it. It's great.
Yeah. The things they have.
Like main characters in the first one, and they're definitely like more supporting.
R2 is like around in this movie, but it's just.
I was like thinking about it, just reading one of those like interviews with Anthony Daniels, but like the first movie, they are like point of view characters. Like,
right.
They're like part of the ensemble, and then they're definitely like, they're in it and they're plot relevant, but they're not like, I guess they don't develop.
They're strictly, R2 is the comedy of Luke training, and 3PO is every time they're in trouble, he's like, we are so screwed. And they're like, shut up, dude.
It's actually kind of funny because R2 becomes the 3PO. R2, 3PO is like anxious the whole fucking movie for the first movie. And R2's like, I'm going to fucking do this. I'm going to do that. And this whole time he's like, should we be going to Dagobah? Are you sure? I should you be doing that? I don't like this at all. Like they completely like
flip. That's the married couple thing. The two of them rub off on each other.
They just needed Luke.
Then there's the bit where he literally just like sticks a random thing in a random socket and
he's like, oh, like, R2.
He's like, it's not my job to fucking tell you what your dick in a fucking that? Like. Come on,
they're a robot married couple. I do not care. That's what they are.
They are. They like love each other.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
They in the book they have a couple more lines, but even in the movie in the beginning when they like separate, it's like pretty clear that they're like.
Yeah. I love you all too.
Yeah. Also another Rise of Skywalker Empire Strikes Back comparison is I feel like the 3PO in Rise of Skywalker is like very much trying to be the 3PO from Empire.
I literally don't even remember what C3PO does in that movie.
That's all right. I already swore I wasn't going to mention it again.
I remember in Force Awakens, he has a different arm.
That's crazy.
And I think he doesn't have like a funny line about how like you probably couldn't recognize me from the arm.
I definitely. This is so you don't think this is a Mandela effect later.
And then it wasn't. It didn't matter.
Anyone?
Yeah. Anyone? No, it didn't matter at all. It's yeah. No payoff.
What else is worth?
I don't know. I will say this. A lot of the times, one of the things I remember from watching the movie the other day was a lot of the times we were like, oh, is this cool effect shot not going to be in there because it's from special edition? And then it just was in there, like
right. Fully formed. Somehow it was just as like amazing as you remember.
Takes the step back and goes like, pachow, and shoots that one guy down. That was sick. Or that one scene where the one ship flies through the other ship with the blue sparks flying out.
Yeah.
Super cool.
There were just ones where like, even if I didn't, I just assumed that they would be too hard to pull off. But this is why you're like, watch. What they like were able to figure out between A New Hope when they invented this technology that never existed before to now is like fucking bravo. Like, holy shit. You guys like didn't just like sit on your ass in between movies. You were like, whenever I like, I've been doing more stuff with like stunt people. We've done some like stunt stuff and it's really, really fun to meet people of a new discipline that have your same level of stuff because like how we geek out about scripts and whatever, they geek out about stunts and they're always like, they'll do it and like, that was cool. And they're like, that was cool. I have an idea. It's a little dangerous. Can I do it? And we're like,
yeah.
Yeah. And it feels like they were like, cool. So we figured out how to make those like TIE fighters blow up. What if we make it do fucking whirly loops and then it like is on fire and then it hits a fucking asteroid and they're like, fucking do it.
Yeah,
and then you have Empire Strikes Back. That scene is insane.
Yeah. But they also do it later again behind a cloud.
Yeah.
This wasn't the old, this that wasn't like,
yeah.
That was 1980. It was like, they flew it behind the cloud.
Yeah.
Like the tech involved that, I can't even imagine what that would be like.
Yeah.
Awesome. The cloud and like the one where it dips into
the crater.
The asteroid,
yeah.
Like, for me, they did that all, did they do that all at once? Because I didn't like,
the camera
see
swoops in
the
with
background.
It
didn't look like plates that were shifting. It like it looked like a
yeah.
A
I don't know how this thing.
No, that is absolutely so. Hey, this is your tune to the Patreon. That absolutely is an ILM technique that they developed. It's called like Dijkstra Cam or something. Like it's a computer generated. They used a camera hooked up to a computer to do that shot.
What computer, like...
I'm telling you, one of those, like, big-ass, like...
Oh, the, like, Zemo, the, like...
Yes.
Feed it tapes.
It's the whole idea of the Star Wars special effects is, like, if you perfectly mimic the movement, you can take it, do as many takes as you want, and just track things in over and over again. That's, like, the whole deal. It's, like, how they still do, like, what's that company? Leica Studios.
Yes.
All the Box Troll Paranormany movies. They still use that like computer perfect. I don't know what the tech is called. What did you say?
There was.
Oh, and this for ILM, it was Dijkstra Film or Dijkstra Cam or something like that.
Probably what it is. It's probably
they have that like, they still use that on a like, you can get arms and other things that are programmed to literally do the like nano perfect same maneuvers, so you can get like time lapse shots with motion and stuff, and it's perfect. I did not realize because they were just fucking inventing like stuff 3 years earlier that wasn't even on that level. I didn't know they could do that.
Yeah, it's and again, all those shots because you saw it more recently in special effect up versions. They were there. They were just there, and it makes it so much more impressive when you watch the originals. It's mind blowing.
I every time was like waiting to be disappointed by like a shittier shot and was left like excited that movie technology was so tight.
Everybody like looks back at a time in their like, especially as like, creatives, maybe people in the office don't have the same thought, but like, you're like, man, those early like Game Station days when we had like our own, we got to just riff and do whatever. I don't think anybody had golden days like ILM when they like got to like reinvent the way, and then everything they made was like killer, and then they got acclaim and stuff from it. Like their like heyday was like, have you ever seen so much?
They're
it was
as,
like
a light they're speed as Star of, Wars as of, George Lucas's, to be honest.
Yeah,
yeah, like as integral to the whole magic of it as him, for sure.
Crazy. Oh,
yeah.
Is that and then it? They do it. And they fucking do it again with Jedi.
Well, they do it for like 50 years.
Yeah.
With like a million movies. It's like crazy. They're like the best thing that movies ever did. They're so
good. The like, you know, like whenever you get, well, if you get VR, you get like tech or any kind. There's a new kind of like thing. There's like a tech demo that like playroom for the PS5 controller, whatever that thing is. That's like what the Star Wars movies are, except for they're also like an incredible saga. They're like
the best movie,
the best movie and best tech demo of new tech ever.
I can't believe we're on the other side of the Empire Strikes Back already. We feel like we just barely started the show.
What comes next?
Boy, we are about to do a bunch of stuff that has
another Han Solo.
Are we getting the same thing where like, and we're getting Empire from the comics.
So I don't know how, like, I haven't read these next comics. Jesse has, so maybe he can tell you.
I'm only like three or four into it comparative to where you guys are.
So next is that comic. The next one after Empire Strikes Back is Star Wars Original Marvel Epic Collection Volume 2. That's like...
How many issues?
Like 25. Not too bad.
I gotta start reading right now.
It's really not that many.
I'm really slow.
I get it, but even at a slow pace, I'm talking...
You don't understand, Davis... loves comic book panels.
I know he does.
The man will sit there and really like appreciates at a level that is good.
I can just show you. I still have
art gallery.
When I was reading like the Power Rangers things like years ago, like I have like 100 pages because I was like just reading a panel. I was like, whoa, Zordon talking to Zordon the future. I like took a picture, talked to Alex for like 30, 20 minutes about it. Then like finally got panel to the next page.
So funny. It's almost like you're
ADHD.
It's almost like you're like not like reading the like sequential art of the comic. Like you're like reading the story and you're like putting together the story of the comic by these paintings that you saw in this art gallery, but you like aren't like scanning them. You're like, wow, every frame of painting.
You know what I'm doing? You know how like The Flash?
Yeah.
Like in some comics, he's like, everyone thinks that I'm impatient, but like it's an eternity.
Yeah.
They have a conversation with you. I'm like reading, but in real time, like what it's like to be him, where he's like, I see something. I have all this internal dialogue about it. Like by the time I get the next piece of information from you in real time, it's like a year for me.
Yeah.
That's me, except for that's in real time where I'm like,
you're just Dr. Manhattan standing on Mars, standing with your wife the day you met her, standing at the fair. That's you. Han Solo
just
and the
most
Lost
of those things never happened because they were all in my fucking head.
So first we get a break into the comic world with episode 10, Star Wars Marvel Epic Collection 2. Episode 11 is going to be Han Solo and the Lost Legacy, the third Brian Daley Han Solo.
Great.
Which is, I'm excited for to come back to after such a break.
I'm like also sad that it's going to be over. But like,
but then we it's Lando.
You know what? Before I knew about it, I didn't know about it. And I was still excited about it.
And there's three Lando books teed up. Okay. But
by who? By who?
Another guy.
Okay.
So then
give me that guy again.
Then we do something interesting after the Han Solo book, which is the Star Wars newspaper strips Epic Collection number one, which is like
what?
Another set of comics that's like
that not, can't be any good. That can't
wait,
be
didn't
good.
Didn't we already? We read like a fan magazine or
we read like the comic book.
There's still some more of that
like
in the second collection that we're going to read as episode 10.
Yeah, but you're talking about like the Garfieldization of Star Wars.
I don't think so.
I'm worried that's what it's going to be.
I don't think so. I don't think
it's, like Luke's like, oh, I've got a case
I don't
of the
think
Mondays.
It's 400 pages of Garfield.
In fairness, there was a little bit of that. I want to go to the Hosh team and get some power converters. Like there was a little bit of like young Garfield in him.
Yeah.
In New Hope.
Yeah. He loved lasagna too.
I want to go to lasagna station to get some lasagna.
What are we even doing here?
I saw somebody, a Disney meme. Did I show you that?
No.
The line of him being like, what are we even doing here?
Oh, that's like when you go to Rope Drop. And then you're
at the Starbucks next to Rope Drop at 6 a.m.
Yeah. God, that may be the most true.
It's a great.
I've ever.
You just got to go on the internet more. It's crazy over there. Star Wars newspaper strips is number 12.
I did once, and then I was like, hey, you're right. You agree with me. Last Jedi's bad. Oh, nope. I made a wrong turn. Help.
Episode 13 is Star Wars Original Marvel Epic Collection number 3.
So we're in full comic book territory until Return of the Jedi.
No, because we have Han Solo in there also.
Han Solo, but how much of...
Oh, because we're doing like an arc, right?
Yeah, and then we're like done with Star Wars comics for...
A while.
So long. There's one more
but
after
then
that.
Then after that, when does it get to that shit you were saying where it's like, you remember when they used to plug in their fucking lightsabers?
That's in the 90s. That's in the
90s. Okay.
Yeah.
It, nothing comes... There is...
That's after they've mined the future for a while.
There is a whole period where book-wise, There's not much. And it isn't until Thrawn appears and Timothy Zahn starts writing that it picks up again. And that's in the 90s.
What was the medium that they were doing?
In the 80s, like after the movies came out?
Listen to this. Not much. Yeah, we're doing the four Marvel epic collections in the newspaper collection.
Yeah.
Then we're into Return of the Jedi for like two things, bang, bang. Then it's Lando three times in a row. Then we do another little comics thing. We're still in 1984 at that time. Then it's time for the Caravan of Courage.
Oh.
Which I'm so excited about. This Caravan of Courage is pretty great. And then, like, the Battle of Endor is right after in 1985. And then it's droids in 86. And then it's, like, other than, like, a comic here and there, it's just those TV shows till 1991.
Yep.
Which is when Heir to the Empire comes.
Because I never watched the Ewok movies, I thought that there was just, they like stopped and then they started up again. That is basically what happened.
There was no media other than like the few TV things and like a few little comics, but there was no like books at a regular
pace. They weren't making merch. Yeah. They stopped producing. Star Wars essentially ended because then they went on other things. There were other movies they were doing.
The trilogy was done.
Yeah. But fans were still around. And eventually in the 90s, they were like, F it. Let's make some.
Was there any other franchise like on the same level? Like, were they just like, look, we got a lot out of it. We got comics. We got other stuff.
Like Star Trek was like a big one for merchandising and franchising.
But you have to remember, it was still the fandom after the movies was over. Was still in that, like, the same space as D&D or the same space as Star Trek, where it was, like, the nerds, you know what I mean?
Right.
And it wasn't, like, a pop culture thing that it is now.
America just wanted to go see the movies.
Yeah, they liked the movies and all the extra stuff was whatever. It had a small audience. And it wasn't until much later.
Now we have, like, well, we have so much content. There's, like, so much shit, but also, like, sci-fi stuff was expensive and you didn't get it that long, so it like it
nowadays lasted. Nowadays it's like every week there's something Star like, Wars to buy.
I would watch like Lord of the Rings like 10 times a year, all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Or like
10 times a year.
Dude, I was like obsessed.
That's a lot.
Well, here's the thing. When you play World of Warcraft, sometimes
you have a lot of free time.
5 years.
You gotta level up.
5 years, that's 50 times.
When you're hyper obsessed about 50 farming times. Cobra Scale hoods, because that was the one epic.
Then you are lost.
Look, I got that recipe and I made a lot of money off it. And you have to just farm things. So you just put on stuff and you just watch stuff all the time.
I would talk shit, but I like do the exact same thing with Pokemon.
No, you're allowed to talk shit. It is foolish. It's foolish.
I did it with
as Pokemon, a person who I did it. Yeah,
Pokemon. I didn't even battle.
His is even worse because it was for nothing.
Yeah,
it was for nothing. Gained nothing.
I gained literally nothing.
You lose.
Yeah, I gained nothing.
I said good day, sir.
Well, you know what? I would say I gained fun.
Damn.
Did you?
You know.
I've read your thoughts on it.
I don't know.
I read a piece you wrote about
my review
about where you were like questioning.
He read my self-confidence issues. Yeah. So he did. So that's fine. Don't worry about it, guys. This has been another episode of the Star Wars Old Canon Book Club. Thanks so much for watching. If you are having a grand time hanging out with us here today and you want to just listen to us for a little bit longer, head on over to patreon.com/swokbok. SWOCBC, and we'll be there with Star Wars Inside the Insider, the very first episode right after this, just for patrons for a while. Like I said, everybody's going to get it. You just got to wait longer. It's okay. You're going to get it for free, just like I said. And stay gold. We'll see you guys later.
Bye.
Bye.
Later.
The Star Wars Old Canon Book Club is made possible by contributions from our listeners at patreon.com/SWOCBC, where again, this week, we've just released the accompanying audio watch-along for Star Wars Empire Strikes Back 4K 1980, featuring Alex, Jesse, and Davis. We thank you for your support. This month's Patreon Masters of the Force are Benjamin Costello, Sovereign, Ian Berenade, Trevor Isom, Patrick Rowland, Amy W., T-Boneses, Jazz Owl, Evan Alexander Guillen, Peacetime Mando, and Metroid Mike. Thanks for listening. We'll be back soon with a discussion about our next selection, Star Wars, The Original Marvel Years, Volume 2 by Marvel Comics. This episode was edited by Alex Del Campo and Alex Fossiani. The theme song is Venus, The Bringer of Peace by Gustav Holst,
performed by the U.S. Air Force Heritage of America Band. Original show art by Jackie Whistler. See you next time.